Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition, Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, 80s action star Colton Stone, and you can hit us up, 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Tap the line with Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. Pretty excited today. More thoughts on Nebraska football from Bill Moose. We'll get into that in a minute. Mitch Sherman, who is in Iowa City Saturday, ESPN extraordinaire. Mitch Sherman in 15 minutes. Talk some college football with us. Nebraska Big Ten college football playoff. And in 1 hour, it's Big Ten buffet time with Rick Pizzo. Get his take on Nebraska. Get his take on what's happening in the Big Ten. And we'll also run down Jacob Padilla of HailVarsity.com and magazine, because it is basketball season. Tim Miles spent some time with the media yesterday. I'm excited for this basketball season. Going to go tonight, check out the team. I know it's against Northwood. There's a joke in there somewhere, but that's who's finding their way to PBA. And let's see how the fellas look. I know, well, football ain't been great, so maybe basketball will save us all. You can email us if you like, Chris at HailVarsity.com, and find us on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio or at HailVarsity. Okay, what's going on HailVarsity.com's message board is the Scott Frost in Florida and Nebraska sweepstakes. We'll get into that in a bit. And from a list, you know, if Scott's not number one on your list, because, listen, man, you've played the make-believe athletic director role, haven't you? You put a list together, ink, pencil, invisible ink, whatever. You've got a list. And just as I'm geared up to talk about that, because I've tried to stay away from it, I believe that things are done. Bill Moose discusses the latest with the World Herald today. And Bill Moose asked about a final decision on Mike Riley's future, and there hasn't been a final decision yet. He's not made a final decision. Now, you have Mario Goodrich and his words to rivals, Riley telling him that I'm not going to get fired. That's true. He may retire. Which, you know, there's 100 different choose-your-own-adventure endings with this. And I don't think you want to off Mike Riley if you're Nebraska. I think the retirement angle, if things don't get turned around or you don't get to a bowl game, you need to look elsewhere. And when it comes to Mike Riley and retirement with his age, that's just nice and tidy. Can you be the football program that whacks 2 9-win coaches and then discards Mike Riley? So Bill Moose today, a final decision regarding Mike Riley and his future has not been made. They're still evaluating going on. They're still assessing the program. So I guess my reaction to that is, well, yeah, you can tell me if we're going to split hairs that a final decision's not been made because it's not been announced. Is that what we're waiting on, an announcement? Is he still truly evaluating? And he may be. Listen, Moose is going to do what Moose wants to do. That's why he was hired. And he was also asked about apathy. And I think that's depending on how these next two games go, based on how Northwestern went, based on how you emptied out against Ohio State, there's a theory out there that there's going to be a lot of black and yellow in the stands on Black Friday because you that wear red and white won't want to be there because you've seen enough. You're ready for basketball season. So I think apathy is alive and well when it comes to caring and interest in the football season at this point. Now, when it comes to the fan base, Moose's response, yeah, they're frustrated, they're angry. I hear them. And the direction to get back to is competing and beating the Penn States and Ohio States of the world. How about we get to Iowa, Wisconsin? I just said that. Let's get to Iowa, Wisconsin level where you can rise up at home, be great at home, and take out a top five. And when it comes to the suggestion about hiring Scott Frost, that's something that was touched on in this interview. The suggestion is go get Frosty. And Moose's response, yeah, Scott's having an outstanding season. He's paid his dues. He deserves the attention he's getting. We're all pulling for him to win his conference and get to a nice bowl game. Bill Dolman has said it, I don't know how many Fridays in a row. Be prepared to get a no from Scott Frost. And I'll tell you this, I'm right in the middle with what I'm hearing, what I'm thinking, what I'm feeling. Sure, he wants to come back. No way he doesn't want to come back. And Florida has gotten a head start, presumably, because they have a interim coach to get this deal done. And we've had the discussion why Florida is not as good a job as Nebraska, or maybe the better term is Florida is just a tough job, super tough gig compared to Nebraska. And I guess it kind of boils down to what's Frost want to do if there is an opening. And if you believe Bill Moose, and I'm not saying he's untrustworthy or dishonest, I'm not saying that at all, but from the way things were termed today, he hasn't made a final decision. That's fine, but he probably has a lean one way or the other. And if you're leaning one way or the other, and a recruit, Goodrich, is saying that Riley isn't going to get fired, well, fine. He may not get fired, but will he be here next season? I would doubt that. Based on apathy, based on on-field consistency, based on morale, I think the kids are going to keep playing. I'm talking the fan morale. The belief is not there that it's going to get turned around this season or be better in future seasons. Which kind of gets to the Hail Varsity discussion going on with fit, right? You hear a lot about fit. What does fit mean to you? And is it required to be the Nebraska head football coach? When I think of fit with Nebraska, there's two ways you can go when it comes to building a championship football program. Jimmy Walton said this, 5-star or 5-year or you mesh. Okay? Talked to Dr. Rob Zadiska. We talked to Joel Makovic. We talked to Wistrom. We talked to guys that were grinders, first of all. But you talked to guys that ran so many plays during so many practices during so many years that it was second nature to them by the time they were asked to start. They had so much repetition because they were recruited to a system and the other buzzword being blueprint from Bill Moose that it was rehearsed, 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 and then executed. The simplistic practice makes perfect. And if I'm looking at what this program needs right now, and I look at Nebraska football, they got to get a guy that understands the way Nebraska won. And you can talk about being physical, and that is so important. But the reason Nebraska was so physical is, A, they either recruited tough dudes or they made dudes tough. And then, B, they emphasized it on both lines of scrimmage, so you wanted nothing to do with them by the third or fourth quarter. And I think you can still win that way in college football. And it's not scheme-specific. Shaw at Stanford, Harbaugh at Michigan, Saban until he got Jalen Hurts at Bama, Jimbo Fisher at Florida State. All had really awesome quarterbacks for the most part. Harbaugh, not so much. But they're good on the lines of scrimmage. They're tough. Okay? So they've won and won championship with the pro style. So I'm not here to incinerate the pro style if you're able to run the football. And Nebraska's not, because they're not good on the lines of scrimmage. They're not good at stopping the run, and they're not great at it being able to run the football. They pick their spots. So when I think of fit here, to me, either the current head coach, if he gets another year, which I don't know that he can change how he wants to do business with a pass-first, Pac-12, throw-it-around mentality, finesse. But whoever the next guy is or the current guy is, can you fit how Nebraska's won with that blueprint? And that comes down to making kids tough, finding tough kids, and putting a practice setup together as limited as contact is in today's day and age. You still find time to be physically violent a few times a week to get your guys ready during the week for Saturday. So Saturday's not brutal. So you're not getting punched in the mouth and you're the guy laying around on the ground grabbing your wrist. And from a fit standpoint, you got to get a coach either to change his mind on how he does business or a new option at development is first, second, and third with this football program. And are there guys out there? Is there a list you can put together out there when it comes to development? Absolutely. But development's got to be first, and then you develop that into talent, and then you go get some talent from wherever you want to go, Florida, Texas, California, Ohio Valley, Jersey, Chesapeake region. I don't care. You can fill in. Nebraska can go get skill guys. They've never been able to not get skill guys, but you've not been able to just be the toughest dude on the line of scrimmage for a long, long time on offense and on defense. So we'll get more into fit, and that fit has to be a mindset of physicality. And that's how Nebraska comes back, either with the current coach or if there's a new coach out there. Now, from a coaching list, top choice in this state is Scott Frost. Second choice in this state is Scott Frost. Third choice in this state, number seven, Scott Frost. But if you get beyond that, say Frosty says, you know what, we're happy down here in Florida. I want to play at a high level. I want to coach at a higher level than Central Florida. Let's go Gators. Okay, let's just move on up the road and still recruit and do my thing down there and make it rain in the SEC East. You get the no from Frost. You move on to who or what if a decision is eventually made by Bill Moose on Mike Riley, and Mike Riley, say, he steps away and retires at age 64 before or after the Iowa game. Where do you go next? Who do you go to? Do you want to roll the dice and get a Chip Kelly? And Chip's kicking it, making money on ESPN on Saturdays. Came in with a unique offense similar to Osborne, where it was a unique offense you couldn't just prep for. A lot of people are running spread. Chip did it first. Chip did it best. and he was able to get athletes to a place like Oregon that had marketing appeal and uniforms and wardrobes. But push came to shove, they were unique at what they did, and you couldn't simulate or prepare for it. And it was a scarce place to recruit to when he started there. So he gets it there. He's more of an NFL guy. He wants to get back to the NFL. You'd be renting, not buying, which could be okay. Maybe he hangs on to the program, builds it up. If the opportunity and decision is made to move in a different direction, does that, and then you go after Frost a second time to replace the guy who hired him and elevated him. You hear Matt Campbell's name out there, Iowa State, Cyclone. That guy's impressive. He's won. He's won big. And this isn't just a flash in the pan. I know it's year two at Iowa State, but you're now going from 3-9 to two top 10 wins, and you'll finish at 8 or 9 wins already. You'll jump from 3 wins to likely in that 8 or better window. And he's got a history of lower division championships. He's a Mountain Union guy. I like him. I like Stoops. I know, drug test me. I like Shaw. I mean, there's 12 guys you can throw out there that you want. Who can you get? Who fits? And do they develop talent and then surround that developed talent with some playmakers? We'll talk to Mitch Sherman. Great to be with you on a Tuesday with Hail Varsity.
He's in his 30s, but sounds like he was born with a stogie in one hand and a brew in the other.
Now, say my name.
It's Schmitty on Hail Varsity Radio.
I got the body of a taut preteen Swedish boy.
We'll get to the short list I have around 4:40. And Rick Pizzo coming up at 5. Welcome in with ESPN.com and magazine, Mitch Sherman at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, you have been to the, it's Iowa, it's not heaven, but it might be football heaven the last 2 weeks when it comes to Iowa State's win over TCU. You were there, you saw, and then you saw the you saw Kinnick renamed Woodshed, Iowa, with what they did to Ohio State. Scale of 1 to 10, your shock level with what happened and what you witnessed.
I assume you're just talking about this last Saturday.
Yes.
And not the two of them in conjunction. Yeah, my shock level with Woodshed, Iowa, was about a 9 on a scale of 1 to 10. You know, the only reason I don't go 10 is because of what Ohio State did the week before in Columbus. Mm-hmm. If there's been a game for the Buckeyes that ripened them for a letdown, then it was that comeback win at home over Penn State, after which it seemed that there would be smooth sailing for Urban Meyer and his troops all the way up to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game and seemingly right on into the college football playoffs. So they made it over their big hurdle, and on the way down back to the ground, they got leveled by Iowa. So, yeah, it was a surprise for sure. Would have been a pretty big surprise, probably like a 7 or an 8, just an Iowa victory. But to do it by 31 points was stunning.
It was. And do you have a different takeaway now on the Big Ten as in reference to, like, strength of conference?
Yeah.
Is it okay, they're not just top heavy, they're deep and balanced, or is your takeaway what the hell's happening? You had the two heavyweights lose to a very beatable Michigan State and a very beatable Iowa.
Well, I think the conversation has to start with the previous week. I think on most Saturdays in the fall, Ohio State beats Iowa despite the score last week. That's no disrespect to the Hawkeyes. I just spent part of my Tuesday with Kirk Ferentz and his players again at interviews, so we're giving them the love they deserve after that monumental win. And I think they may go and do it again on Saturday at Camp Randall, considering Wisconsin's injury woes. But I think you have to take into account what happened the week before, and then beyond that, this is just for this is just the reality in at so many places in college football. Now, I don't know if it's the reality at Alabama. I don't know if it's the reality at Nebraska right now that anything can happen. Huskers.
Mitch, are you there, partner? You've been swallowed
I'm
up.
I'm here.
Okay, yeah, you were cutting out. Go ahead. You were talking about Nebraska's reality.
Yeah, I'm driving through the back roads of Wisconsin on my way to Madison. So, anyway, this is just...
Let's try and reconnect with him, please. Mitch Sherman, somewhere in Dairyland. Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and magazine at Mitch Sherman. Mitch is awesome. Mitch is everywhere. And Mitch has been in Ames and Iowa City for the two biggest college football wins, arguably, of the season for that state. Do we have him? We got him? Mitch, are you there, sir?
I am here. I am navigating through the back roads of Wisconsin up toward Madison. So I'll try to get to a spot where I won't, where I don't lose you, but... my point was that that's the reality of college football, that so much can happen in any given week. And we saw great examples of that in the Big Ten last week.
No, you did. I wanted to get your thoughts here. Let's move to Nebraska here. And Bill Moose today came out and said he has still not made a final decision on Mike Riley's future. A recruit told Rivals that Riley told him he wasn't getting fired. Mm-hmm. And I believe both men... But there's still some wiggle room, fired versus retirement and final decision versus leaning one way or the other. Did Saturday just help maybe make a lean possible? Or if you're Bill Moose, do you just wait till after Iowa? And then what else is out there is Florida and their pursuit of Frost. And I wanted to kind of get your take there. What do you believe about Frost in Florida? I mean, do you think that's Nebraska's main competition, or is Nebraska even something he wants to do when other options are out there? And he still might like Central Florida. He might just want to do another year there too. I don't know, but it's a very complicated dynamic.
Yeah, it is. And when it comes to Nebraska and inserting Nebraska into the conversation, that's the million-dollar question. Is he still interested in Nebraska in the same way that he was when he got into coaching? Mm-hmm. What is the emotional attachment? I think he's a very serious candidate at Florida. I think it's likely, if it probably very possible, however you phrase it, they are interested. Florida is interested in him, and it's a serious situation for Nebraska because that is the better job. Florida is the better job at this point. So if it comes down to Scott Frost having to choose between his heart and his mind, between emotion and intelligence, it's anybody's guess as to which direction that thing's going to go. So as for the beginning of that question about what's happening at Nebraska, I take Bill Moose at his word. I think you can start to dissect comments and get a little bit over analytical.
Yep.
At this time. I don't put a lot of stock in nothing against a what a recruit says, but a recruit walks into this and isn't necessarily up to speed on all of the moving parts. And you know what a recruit says, I think you have to realize that he's possibly getting a very small piece of the picture. So, if you're Mike Riley, you're operating under the belief that you're going to be back next year. And he said as much yesterday in his press conference that all we can do is coach our team and plan to build the next one. So I'm sure his message to recruits is just that. They're operating as if everything's fine. And, you know, he knows that there's a possibility that something may change. And I think a recruit who is worldly and understand and recognizes the realities of college football would understand that too. But I don't believe Mike Riley is just flat out saying it's 100% certainty to recruits that I'm coming back next year, because he doesn't know that. I can't imagine that he knows that. And I think, what happens here with that decision is, you know, only Bill Moose knows, but it seems to be pointing very much in one direction, and the direction is that a change is going to be made.
Mitch Sherman's with us, ESPN.com and Magazine, Roaming the Hills of Wisconsin, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter is where you follow him as he is headed up to Madison for the Iowa Badger Showdown on Saturday. Now, with Nebraska, we were discussing this on HailVarsity.com. When it comes to fit, what does fit mean to you with Nebraska? Because that's associated, if a change is made, the next guy's got to fit. Do you have a definition of fit in your mind?
You know, I think it's one of those things that you know when you see.
Yeah.
I don't think that there are words to describe exactly what it means. It can mean different things for different candidates. And for some, it may be obvious the day that coach walks onto campus. I think Scott Frost would be an obvious fit for Nebraska from the standpoint that he is intimately familiar with the state and with the program, and the transition period for him would not be as difficult or as lengthy as it would be for another guy who could be as good or better fit in the end. You know, it's a tricky word, and there are a lot of examples to look back on at Nebraska over the past 15 years. And, you know, it would have seemed that Steve Peterson as an athletic director was a great fit. He was, by the definition of it. And obviously, by the end of his time there, that was not the case. Bill Callahan, on the other hand, was not a good fit for Nebraska. It didn't seem to be when he was hired. And after 4 years, it was more evident than in the beginning that he wasn't a good fit. So for him, he never made it across that threshold. He never made the transition. There may be another guy who could come into that same spot and, you know, make himself a better fit. But I don't believe there is a word-for-word definition as to what makes a good fit. It has to be a guy who connects with the fan base, embraces the state, and understands the importance of that program to the state of Nebraska. I mean, it seems obvious, but I think there are examples in college football where people just don't get that, and you have to understand it in Lincoln.
Mitch, you got about 2 minutes here. Chip Kelly, what do you think he wants to do? Is he cool just doing studio analysis work with ESPN? Do you think he wants to get back at the NFL? Does he want to try and reassemble the magic that he had in Oregon? I mean, what's your theory on Chip's next move?
I have a hard time, you know, I don't have any insight into what he's thinking. I'd have a hard time guessing. You know, I know that these guys who are coaches and have coached at that level are wired to coach, and there are very few of them who walk away into a life of broadcasting or whatever it might be and feel entirely satisfied. I think for most of those coaches, I mean, unless you're John Gruden and you're on Monday Night Football and you're in the booth and you've just got that unique personality, I think most of them still yearn to coach on some level. And, you know, the NFL is the highest level, but he kind of bombed out there. So where do you go from there? I think you go back to college and you look at big time programs like a Tennessee or a Florida or wherever it might be. I don't think he's somebody who would fit at Nebraska. We just talked about fit, and I don't think that would necessarily be there with Chip Kelly. I understand there's a connection with the athletic director, mm-hmm. but it would be somewhat of a hard sell. Mm-hmm. Not to say that he couldn't get it done, couldn't do a good job. He's obviously a very accomplished coach, but I think there's a spot that would probably work better for him in the Power Five. And if I'm guessing as to what he's thinking, what's going on in his mind, I would say he probably wants to coach again, just because, like I said, I know how those guys are usually wired.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com and Magazine. Mitch, we'll catch up next week. Thanks so much for the time today.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Take care.
You too. Mitch Sherman.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Your Husker basketball preview, less than an hour away with Jacob Padilla. Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Buffet, coming up at 5 o'clock. Big thanks to Mitch Sherman. Chip Kelly, not a fit in Nebraska. That's what Mitch was saying, but didn't rule it out 1,000% either, just because of the connection. And why am I talking about this? Because of Bill Moose's comments today. No decision has been made yet. No final decision. You got to have a list. And Moose has maybe got that desk drawer with the top drawer in it now that has a list as he's making a decision. You're weighing your options. And you heard Mitch say that you're talking threat. Well, I mean, Florida, a massive threat with money and prestige and recent championships and recruiting territory. And aside from Georgia, very, very, very winnable division. And you get Georgia in the cocktail party every year, even though I'm not supposed to call it the cocktail party anymore. I don't know. And what Mitch said here about Frost and that discussion, only he knows and those super, super, super close to him know when it comes to his head versus his heart. So Scott, looking at his decisions, historically speaking, and I go back to one going to Stanford over Nebraska, that was a decision he made with his head. Not his heart. It would have been easy to stay here at Nebraska, be the hometown quarterback. He also made a decision with his head to come back to Nebraska because it wasn't going so well at Stanford, getting jerked around while he was doing really well at safety. Then it would have been real easy for him to kind of do his thing and wait for probably some plum positions, but no, he paid his dues in a lot of different spots. I mean, I remember Frost against Boise, making sure LeGarrette Blount didn't rip someone's throat out, and Frost manhandling LeGarrette Blount post-game. That was crazy. Scott's a guy who goes with what's between the ears a lot of times versus the heart and emotional tie. And maybe he does pick Florida. Maybe the brakes need to be pumped on Nebraska. So if that's the case and a change is made, what's your second choice? And here's my short list. Maybe things turn around and it's moot, but fit and coaches, and what coach do you think fits best for Nebraska, assuming you agree that what Nebraska's doing right now, the direction they're going on offense right now, the direction they're going from a physicality standpoint right now, isn't a fit? Can you change what you are? You can always change, but are you good at being something you're not? It's your heart, again, head versus heart. Is your heart into it? So if changes are made, if a direction's gone, and you pick a different vision and plan, you need to go look at some of the guys out there that kind of do it for you. And Frost is on my short list. Chip Kelly's there as number two, even though Mitch said it's not an ideal fit. I have Stoops there because he's one. He's also a guy in the Big Ten that would relish playing Iowa and Ohio State. Played for Iowa, obviously. Big 12 background. And the guy that replaced him, you have a home and home with Oklahoma coming up in 2021 and 2022. So you'd have a chance to be the guy to resurrect Oklahoma and Nebraska to national prominence and go play for a championship. Matt Campbell, buyouts like $9 million, that's nuts. But Iowa State finally protected themselves with that buyout. But I look at what he's done, man. Impressive. Les Miles and David Shaw, proven winners. Gone to big-time bowl games, have won conference championships. Gary Patterson plays most of the defense in the Big 12. He's a tough guy. Line of scrimmage guy. The Pirate, I know you'll like roll me for suggesting the Pirate because he is, from a fit standpoint and a comfortability standpoint, he's off happy in football Siberias. Dude's very happy, just kind of doing his thing in outposts. But he can win, and he has won at places that you're not supposed to. Why? Because, again, they're physical on the line of scrimmage, offense and defense. And lastly, Craig Bohl. I know. We all ran him out of town. Carry the one. 16 years ago. Man, oh, man. Does he do it well? He knows how to coach. He knows how to develop. And he knows how to go get NFL quarterbacks. The ginger that could and went. Incredible. And Josh Allen at Wyoming. Even in a blizzard. Incredible. Craig Bohl's, what, 59, 60, and I don't know what his buyout is at Wyoming. Going to Wyoming's worked. So there's my short list. I put nine names in front of you there. Now, when it comes to blueprint and fit, again, the process word is key. You keep working, working, working to achieve something. And you got to like the work. And the way you make talent happen, just look at some programs, right? And this is the other thing that sticks in your craw if you're a Nebraska fan. The teams like that you feel, air quote here, superior than, are rolling and doing better. Iowa is the talk of college football this week. Not just because of who they beat, but how they beat them. Iowa State has been getting a lot of pub and love. Look at little Iowa State. Pat us on the head. No, they're good. They're good because they're well coached. And they're doing it with lesser talent or forgotten about players. You have Iowa, you have Iowa State, two teams that just have no business doing their thing, and they are. And they got good because they just keep hammering it. And then there's Wisconsin. And their blueprint, their style, is to just keep developing. We'll hear from Rick Pizzo coming up. 80 years we've been doing things the AgriGold way. For decades, we've built the brand that's truly different because of our knowledge, because of our passion, because we represent the voice of the customer, our true partners providing customers with the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of more diversity, less risk, and greater yield. For more information, visit AgriGold.com today. We'll wind down hour one. Hail Varsity Radio continues.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Programming note, our very own and dear friend, Blackshirt Husker NFLer Jay Moore on Big Red Wrap-Up tonight. They have Bill Moose. That'll be cool. And I'm sure Jay will be incredible, along with Kugler and company. So that'll be nice. Coming up, Rick Pizzo, 10 minutes away, Big Ten Buffet time. We'll cover the weekend and the week that was. Also, Jacob Padilla of Hail Varsity will be with us in hour two, getting ready for Nebraska basketball as Tim Miles takes on Northwood and an exhibition tonight down at PBA. Excited for that. I want to remind you, if you're going out tonight, be sure to get that safe ride home. Don't drink and drive. Could kill yourself, could kill someone innocent, and if you get a DWI, could cost you up to $12,000 in fines and fees and jail time, and you'll be required to install that interlock device on your vehicle. If you're making plans, get that sober ride home. You drink, you drive, you lose. A message from the Nebraska Department of Transportation and Highway Safety Office. A lot of talk about the short list and fit and Bill Moose's comments earlier today about a final decision not being made, and Husker commit Mario Goodrich's comments about that Riley's not going to get fired. So soak in all of that. You have basketball that tips off tonight. And we have an Applebee's Tuesday trivia coming up here around 5:40. Your chance at a $50 gift card. So that's what's in front of you here. Just a last thought here on some of the coaches and the coaching carousel here for several programs. Do you think put yourself in the shoes here of a coach. If you're a coach that has struggled, if you're a coach that's paid his dues, or if you're a hot young prospect that, say, you're in your early to mid to even upper 30s, hell, maybe you're 40, whatever. And is it about longevity or is it about getting paid? Because you're all getting paid right now. If you're at a Power 5, you're getting paid. If you're at a non-Power 5, depending the non-Power 5, Craig Bohl, I don't know his exact salary, but he's probably doing $500,000 or better in Fargo. $500,000 in Fargo's ton of money everywhere else. Price of living, happiness, I get all of that. But if you're weighing whether to leave, you got to judge on how long that window is going to stay open. Can you damage what you've built up? You'll never be hotter than right now if you're Matt Campbell at Iowa State. Unless you keep building on it and say you win a Big 12. Yeah, there's more you can do. You're 6-3 right now. You got nipped at West Virginia. But man, you could be undefeated. Lost by 2 to Iowa in the rivalry game, second week of the year, 44-41. That's not 2, that's 3, but you get my point. And then you lose by a touchdown on a Friday or a Thursday to Texas. I mean, you're right there in all your games. But do you look elsewhere? And when you do look and you take that phone call to triple your salary, is it going to be about, well, let's go to a place like a Nebraska where I'm going to have to find talent and develop talent like Ames? Or do I go to an SEC school where I can throw a rock and find some stud? Some of those guys are creatures of habit, though. It's all about the grind and all about the development that makes it work. Rick Pizzo's on the way with Hail Varsity.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Back with you into Hour 2. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Big Ten Buffet time. Lot to talk about with Rick Pizzo, Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, how's your Tuesday, sir?
A lot calmer than my Saturday was. At one point, we're watching TV in the green room. Ohio State, Penn State, 24-24 fourth quarter. Northwestern Nebraska, 24-all fourth quarter. Maryland Rutgers, 24-all fourth quarter. All on the TV at exactly the same time in the fourth quarter. We're getting ready to do the postgame show. We have no idea if we're going to follow Northwestern Nebraska or Rutgers, Maryland, because the games were basically at the exact same spot on the time clock. And oh, by the way, we're also trying to watch to see if Oklahoma is going to hold off Oklahoma State in a game that features about 2,000 yards. We got done with the postgame show on Saturday, and everybody needed to take this collective giant breath. And then we all looked at each other and laughed and smiled, because that is what makes college football Saturday so great.
Rick, your takeaway from the overtime and the loss by Nebraska to Northwestern. Fitz and the crew just ran the football and got it done in the overtime.
Yeah, they did not play their best game and still won the game on the road. And they did it by dominating the line of scrimmage, which really surprised me. They had been throwing the ball all over the yard last couple of weeks. I thought Clayton Thorson would throw it 40, 50 times instead. They just ran Justin Jackson. They ran Jeremy Larkin. I mean, they ran the ball so well. You could argue as well as they've run it all year long. And Nebraska didn't make adjustments to stop the run. I understand you can't focus on the run when you have a guy like Thorson who had been hot the last couple of games. But when Jackson's tearing you up and when other guys are finding big holes, you have to find a way to be gap sound. And that's why I was so thrown off, Chris, by the comments post-game by Bob Diaco, in which he basically, to paraphrase, said the guys aren't supposed to understand the scheme that we have in place yet. Now, I understand it's a big transition, but this is game 9 of the season. How long do you think that you have? In today's world of college football, you don't have 2 or 3 years to perfect a scheme. You don't even have 9 games after the spring, after the fall. You got to have your guys ready to play and ready to execute what you put on paper by the time the conference play starts. Otherwise, you're going to be in trouble, and this is Exhibit A.
You have 2 jobs, do both, thank you, good night. I mean, that's kind of extremely simplistic, but it kind of comes down to this scheme that with incredible personnel, and when you refine it, you'll have, you hope, a 2012 Irish defense. That's not what you have in Lincoln right now. He's been blasted the last 3 days for whatever he was trying to explain. And I get on the learning curve graph here that they're not up to point X, Y, or Z to be able to do this, but they still got to go win football games, and you got to put them in position to be able to do that and not overthink or be a step or two late with their assignment because they're trying to process what you're asking them to do. When's the last time somebody did not line up and run the football successfully against Nebraska?
Yeah, I mean, you're asking me a very hard question to answer, right? I mean, that's the problem. Here's my thing, mm-hmm. is that the best coaches, whether you're an assistant coach or whether you are a head coach, the best coaches are not guys that come in and say, here is what I do, here is exactly how you have to do it. The best guys come in and say, here is a scheme and a philosophy that I have used with success at other places. And the reason that it has had success at other places is because I've installed what I believe and I have molded it around the personnel that I have. That's the most important quality, in my estimation, of a great football coach, is to take what you believe in, your scheme, your philosophy, but you tweak it and you adjust it based on the guys that you are trying to understand and go through with your performance, your philosophy, and your scheme. And that is something that we have not seen in 2017.
Big Ten Buffet time, Rick Pizzo on Hail Varsity Radio at BTN. Rick Pizzo, a lot more discussion about that that coaches list that ADs keep in their top drawer after Nebraska lost to Northwestern. It's not just the loss to Northwestern. It's a accumulation of things and the topic of Riley's future. Let's spend a minute here on fit and blueprint. Rick, your thoughts here. What does Nebraska need from a coach, either current coach or what's out there, when it comes to what Nebraska football can do successfully to get back? What is part of that fit? Do you get what I'm asking? I mean, what's the ingredients here to make Nebraska really good?
Sure, I do. And there are 2 philosophies when it comes to fit and when it comes to getting a program that is either average or slightly above average. And I would still say that Nebraska is slightly above average. I know people are going to tell me that I'm crazy, but folks in Lincoln believe, and Husker fans everywhere believe, they're below average because of expectations. This is still a program that has great potential. Mm-hmm. But what you have to do is decide, do you want to risk going out and getting a young, creative, offensive-minded head coach, a guy like Scott Frost, to come in and try to recruit those players to come to Lincoln? Because it is not easy to recruit to Nebraska, and that is something that is a recent trend. I know Tom Osborne had a ton of success. That was a long time ago. It is not easy to recruit the best athletes from the talent-rich areas to come and play football at a place like Lincoln. It is a tough place. Early recruiting will help. But is that what you want to go after? And if that's the case, you probably have to settle in for what I would guess would be a 3 to 5 year transition. Now, the opposite way that you could go is to take what Wisconsin and Iowa does, and you go out and you focus more on your area around your school, and you get 2- and 3-star recruits, and you hire a coach who is more fundamentally sound, and you put a ton of time into recruiting the offensive and defensive lines and hope that skill positions come along. It's the opposite of what a guy like Scott Frost would do. So what works better at Nebraska? In my estimation, my opinion, is that the latter works better, because the Iowas and the Wisconsins are the teams that you should be lining yourself up against and comparing yourself to. The days right now of comparing yourself to the Ohio States and the Penn States and the Michigans, those are days of the past until Nebraska has more success than they've had over the past, 20 years now almost, since they've won a conference championship. So I like taking that second option and going with a fundamentally sound coach who can turn 2- and 3-star recruits into solid college players and match up with the Iowas and the Wisconsins of the world. And it will happen quicker.
No, you're right. And there's two routes, 5-star or 5-year. The old Jim Walton, the gentleman Jim, coined that phrase. And you develop. You got to find a guy that can develop. And as many stars and NFL guys as Nebraska's had, not all of them came in as ballyhooed 4- and 5-star guys. They were developed into excellent football players. And I totally agree with you that the focus should be on getting a system in here and developing to that system. Frost gets that because he was part of it with the offense and the option. He was there. You mentioned Iowa. Shock level from Rick Pizzo that the Hawkeyes did what they did to Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to try to sound smarter than I am and tell you that I thought Iowa was going to win that game handily, but I thought that was going to be a close game based on what Ohio State had come off and that emotional win over Penn State, based on the fact that Kinnick Stadium in these games is worth seemingly a touchdown to the Hawkeyes. But, of course, I was surprised with the way that that Iowa offense just shredded Ohio State's defense. Now, it wasn't a shock to me that JT Barrett struggled. I mean, we've seen this in big moments before. Yes, he put up silly numbers against some inferior competition and then the phenomenal fourth quarter against Penn State. But there were signs that this could happen again and that Iowa defense was built to do that. So while that was surprising, the shock to me was that Iowa did whatever it wanted with the football. I mean, whether it was Akron Wadley and James Butler running it, or whether it was Nate Stanley throwing it all over the yard. I mean, tight ends were open, wide receivers were open, running backs out of the backfield were open. Kirk Ferentz rolls the dice and sets up for the fake field goal with a punter back there who ends up picking up the first down. I mean, I love the play calling. I think Ohio State was completely unprepared. And how often do you say that an Urban Meyer staff was not just outcoached, but was basically so far outcoached that they weren't even in the same building as Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa staff. Obviously now, Iowa has a chance to do the same thing to the West against Wisconsin this week that they just did to the East with that win over Ohio State.
What do you think of this weekend with Iowa and Wisconsin? Does Wisconsin stay unscathed? That's such a rivalry game.
It is. And I think Wisconsin may not be as talented defensively as Ohio State, but they're much more fundamentally sound. You're not going to do against Wisconsin what you did against Ohio State if you're Iowa. I think Kirk Ferentz knows that. But now it's a head-scratcher if you're Paul Chryst and if you're Jim Leonard, the defensive coordinator, because you just watched Iowa throw everything up against the wind and just let it fall where it may. I mean, this is not just a team that's going to hand it to Akron Wadley and James Butler and hope their defense keeps them in games in the fourth quarter. That was what Urban Meyer said about him last week, and he couldn't have been more wrong. So now you have to second-guess your defensive game plan. That being said, I still think that Wisconsin is the favorite at home with Jonathan Taylor healthy in that defense. The Badgers will be tested the next 2 weeks. There's no doubt about it with Iowa and Michigan. But you have to remember, this Iowa game is a rivalry game. It's a trophy game. They're not looking beyond Iowa to Michigan. They are focused solely on this game. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be low scoring. But if I had to put my mortgage on it, I think Wisconsin stays unbeaten.
I think they do, too. We'll get to Barry Alvarez's comments about Wisconsin and the college football playoff in a second. Does the Big Ten reexamine the ask of the heavyweights in the league? And I know everyone's got to play their divisional foes in all Power Fives. That's there. But it was just such a tough stretch for Penn State, for Ohio State. It's been a tough stretch for Michigan State, for Michigan. I mean, it seems like you have 4 consecutive games, pick a team, where you just wear each other out to a nub. And to me, the SEC does a good job of kind of spacing out the ask for an Alabama or for a Georgia this year. Do you think there's a look that happens here to space the scheduling out?
Well, I think the interesting thing that the SEC does, and I've been on this for a while, is that before the biggest games that they play in November, they play a school you've never heard of. They play Alabama, I believe, plays Mercer before the Auburn game. And we've seen the Woffords and the Georgia Southerns. Unless there's a rule against that, which there clearly is not, I think it's brilliant. And if the Big Ten is going to continue doing what they did this year and play a conference game in week one, Ohio State, Indiana, or early week two, and you have space for a non-conference game, to me then you save that weak sister of the poor and you place it in between one of those games late. Now, the Big Ten conference schedules come out so far ahead of time that I'm not sure if the schools have the ability to slide one of those games in there. And I think that's a legitimate conversation that the coaches should be having with the Big Ten conference office. If you want to make the schedule as difficult as it is with nine conference games, Chris, I think you bring up a great point. You should give the schools the latitude to schedule one of those non-conference games right in the middle there, right where that conference scheduled game would typically be, because it benefits the SEC a ton. I mean, you're basically playing a glorified scrimmage. You're sitting most of your guys. It's still a W, but you're getting ready for the next week. You're getting healthy. I think it's brilliant. I mean, I hate it as a Big Ten fan,
sure,
because I see how it benefits the SEC, but if other leagues are going to do that, especially leagues that don't play nine conference games, then the Big Ten needs to think about doing it as well.
Well, I mean, just look at this back-to-back ask where it's Ohio State, Penn State, you touch gloves, awesome game. And then you got to recover emotionally and physically, by the way, and then go to Iowa, where they're incredible against top five teams at home. And then Michigan State, really good football team. You're on the road if you're Penn State. I know there was a weather delay, but it was just set up to be taken down. It was a really, really tough ask. And you're not seeing the Pac-12, you're not seeing the ACC, you're not seeing the SEC go back to back to back like you do in the Big Ten. Let's talk Wisconsin, and quality wins are the question mark. Barry Alvarez this week saying a Power 5 undefeated champ will not be left out. I agree with him. Do you think Wisconsin, though, will continue to get punished by the playoff committee until some of the other teams fall in front of them?
Well, punished is a hard word, because what's going to happen this week, I'm guessing here, is that they're going to move up a couple of spots because of the losses from Penn State and Ohio State. But I think they're probably only going to move up those two spots because I think Miami is going to jump in front of them. You know, Miami had that win over Virginia Tech, and the committee puts itself in a really good spot if Miami is ahead of Wisconsin. Why? Because Miami plays Notre Dame this week. So if Miami loses and Wisconsin wins, it's very easy to move the Badgers back in front of them. And if Miami were to win, that's Notre Dame's second loss. So it's easy to move Wisconsin ahead of Notre Dame. So I think the committee will place them there. They'll probably place them exactly where they want. I think it's probably the right spot for them, but they have Iowa and Michigan the next 2 weeks, and I think the committee should have Iowa ranked this week. They could have Michigan ranked in the top 25 this week. Certainly if Michigan wins this week, then I think they will be in the top 25. So now Wisconsin would have a chance to get back-to-back wins over top 25 opponents. I agree that I don't think the committee would leave an unbeaten conference champ with a title game out of the playoff, because I think the first time that they do, Chris, that's when you have to explore expansion. Mm-hmm. And this committee has made it remarkably clear that they have no interest in doing that for the next 5 to 7 years.
Big Ten Buffet, Rick Pizzo. Catch him throughout the week on the Big Ten Network at BTN. Rick Pizzo. Rick, great to catch up, my man. Thanks for a few.
You know, it's always my pleasure on Tuesdays, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Love talking buffet time with Pizzo. Little college football playoff. Wisconsin, are they in danger? They went out. They're good. Who else is in position to do so? We'll get into that. Don't forget Tuesday trivia with Applebee's coming up at 5:40. How about Husker basketball thoughts? Jacob Padilla joins us next.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Hey, it's basketball season. Can turn your attention to that. Guy who does a great job covering hoops for Hail Varsity, Jacob Padilla, at Jacob Padilla _. We might even sneak in some Suns basketball. Jacob, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about you, Chris?
Doing okay. You're just awesome, man. Tale of the Tapes, great. Your coverage, phenomenal. On HailVarsity.com and in the magazine. I loved your preview of Husker basketball 2017-2018. Let's talk a little Nebraska basketball. And Jacob, when you look at this team and this roster, what are you excited most about as you possibly project this season and how it could go?
I think the number one guy at this point to be excited about is James Palmer Jr., the transfer guard from Miami. He's a four-star prospect coming out of high school, but kind of played reserve minutes for the Canes. Was on their NCAA tournament Sweet 16 team, but didn't play a huge role and decided to move on. And he redshirted with Nebraska last year, worked on his game, worked on his body. And through the charity exhibition, the close scrimmage, and the open team scrimmage that we've seen so far, he's been the best player on the team. He's been an incredibly efficient scorer, putting up points and either shooting from behind the arc, getting to the free throw line, finishing at the rim. He's been really impressive so far. And I think him combined with Glenn Watson is going to give Nebraska a lot of firepower in that backcourt.
When you look at the chemistry of this team, and I know Coach Miles talked to us yesterday, and you've had a chance to be around him quite a bit. Do you think chemistry has been an issue a lot of the years here at Nebraska, even with some talented players? Do you think this year can be different when it comes to sharing the basketball and guys, well, playing well with each other?
Yeah, I think so for sure. You don't have as many guys, I don't think. I mean, it's early on, so we don't know for sure, but it doesn't seem like there are many guys that are quite as worried about what their specific role is and how they're going to be played. A lot of guys seem to be buying into their roles just based on what Tim Miles has said. Obviously, that and a little bit of practice is all we have to go off of. But I think it's the fact that Miles has repeatedly said how much he likes this team. Obviously, nobody's going to say they don't like the team, but I think their repetition and how hard he's hammering this home kind of shows the difference between this year's roster and last year's. As far as on-court chemistry, that's going to take some time. Like Coach Miles said in the press conference, they're still kind of figuring out the communication and who plays well together. But in terms of just kind of buying into the team concept, it seems like these guys are all on the same page.
What do you think the offense and defense can look like identity-wise? That's, we talk about it in football all the time. Well, let's talk about it in hoops for a second here. This team's identity will be what on offense and what on defense?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. We'll have to see. Obviously, with the different personnel, so many different guys, but it seems like Miles is really kind of trying to get them to play a little bit more up-tempo this season. We saw in that open practice, they're running a transition drill where they're putting 12 seconds on the shot clock and let them go full court against each other, just to try to get them kind of into the habit of getting the ball up the floor in a hurry and working to get some shots off in the early clock. And so I think we'll see some more of that with Watson leading the way. You've got someone like Lobe or Isaac Copeland who's capable of grabbing a rebound and initiating the break on his own, kind of like you see the Draymond Green type does in the NBA for the Golden State Warriors. So I think we'll see a little bit more transition play out of them on offense. Defensively, I think we're going to see a little bit tighter defense. They're still going to play Miles, pack line, take away the gap defense. But with the post they have with Jordy Shimanga and Dubio KK and even Tanner Borkart's been playing some minutes in there, I don't think we're going to see as much doubling in the post. You're not playing a guy like Ed Morrow or Michael Jacobson, who are a little undersized, for the majority of the minutes at center now. At least you'd hope not. It'll depend on foul trouble. Those big guys can stay out of it. But so it seems that their defenders are allowed to kind of stay home, because they can go one-on-one in the post and get a good amount of stops, and you won't see as many wide-open threes. And that was a huge problem last year. So combined with the fact that they can stay a little bit tighter, and the improved length with guys like Roby and Copeland and Palmer as a 6'6 guard and Evan Taylor at 6'5 out there. It's going to be a lot harder to get shots off against this team this year, I think.
Tell me a little bit about what had to happen this year when it comes to reinvention for Nebraska basketball. It's a slew of new guys. A lot of them are transfers. Some of them are holdovers from that really good class a few years back, and you've had some departures. How can Coach Miles mold this reinvention into a successful season?
Yeah, a lot of it on the defensive end, like I just mentioned, you got a lot more length now. You got guys who can kind of hold their own. So that was a huge thing to start with. So on defense, if it's taking away threes, and on offense, it's hitting threes. They've been one of the worst shooting teams in the country most of the 10-mile era. And that is really hard when you're giving up three on one end and not making yours on your side. So you've got guys like Palmer, who I think he'll be a little bit streaky, but should be in the mid-upper 30s for three-point percentage. You got Glenn Watson, who's become a deadly shooter. You've got a guy like Thomas Allen, a true freshman, coming in off the bench, who should be able to shoot a really high percentage based on what he's done in college or in high school and his early practices so far. You got a guy like Isaac Copeland that can get hot. But you've got some more shooters on offense, which should open up the whole floor for guys like Palmer and Watson to get to the rim. In the past, they haven't had to worry about the guy standing on the three-point line for defenses to pass the paint and double-team the drive. He's so many times where Ty Webster just kind of putting his head down and driving into three guys or having to pull up for a tough jump shot because there's just no room to the rim. And I think this year they're going to try to spread teams out a little bit more. As part of that transition play I mentioned is getting defenses kind of running all over the place and creating openings for their guards to get to the rim. And then they'll play a little bit through Jordy Shimonga as well. We saw some of that seeing the post and either him going to work or looking to hit some cutters. So I think they're trying to get a little bit more balance this year in terms of different guys handling the ball and making plays and scoring both inside and out.
Jacob Bedilla's with us. Hail Vars. Caught a frog there. Jacob Bedilla with us, HailVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob Bedilla _. Let's discuss lineups here, and you look at the depth and the talent that is on paper. When could you project not only the starters for me, but also some of the roles for guys that may not start, but it can be pretty big time off the bench? Have you gone through that in your mind?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good idea. At this point, I think we kind of know who the starting five is. They're going to go with Glenn Watson Jr., Evan Taylor, the senior, at the two guard, James Palmer at the three, Isaac Copeland at the four, and Jordy Shimonga at the five. So you've got good size. Watson's the only guy in that lineup under 6'5", with Copeland 6'9", Shimonga 6'11", Palmer 6'6" on the wing. So you've got a lot of length there. You got some fours in there with Watson and Palmer and Copeland. You've got a guy like Taylor, who is just kind of the glue guy of the team that's not necessarily going to be a big-time scorer shooter, but he'll defend the other team's best guard. He'll get in there on the glass, grab some rebounds. He'll handle some point guard duties. So he's just kind of the glue guy that will tie things together. He's a guy that junior college didn't have a necessarily great year, but improved down the stretch. And I think he's had a big offseason. I'll be honest, I wasn't super high on him just based on what I saw last year and what I knew of him coming into the season. But it seems like he put a lot of work in and is playing a lot better. Off the bench, you've got Dubi Okeke coming in behind Shimonga. He's the grad transfer from Winthrop, and he's got some NCAA tournament experience. Big-time shot blocker, big-time dunker. I mean, you look at him, the guy is just a physical specimen. Can jump really high in the air, get blocked. At the open scrimmage, he came in and had three dunks and blocked a shot in the third row all in the first few minutes. So I think that's kind of what you're going to get behind him. So you got a nice little center combo there between Shimonga and Okeke. And then Tanner Borgart, I don't necessarily know how many minutes he's going to get, and you don't necessarily want him playing against the Michigan State and the Purdue of the world. But if you get in foul trouble, he's a walk-on guy, about 6'8", big body that can step in there, has really improved. and can give you a few minutes. Isaiah Roby is a little banged up right now. He's got a finger injury. He is not going to play tonight, but I think Tim Miles is hoping to get him back for the season opener. Just want to make sure they let it heal and it doesn't make it anything long-term. And you've got Jack McVay there coming in at either forward spot along with Roby. The 6'8 guy, knocked down shots. He won the team three-point competition the other night, so everybody kind of knows what he is at this point. It's going to come down. He'll be a little streaky, but can bring some shooting off the bench. You got the freshman Thomas Allen coming off the bench behind Watson at the point guard position, and you might see him kind of either sharing the backcourt with someone like Watson or even Evan Taylor to kind of share the ball handling responsibilities. But Thomas Allen is a pure shooter. He can hit it from mid-range, really good three-point shooter, comfortable handling pick and rolls. So he's an exciting freshman that I think is going to have a few good games. I don't necessarily think he's going to be a guy that's going to be a double-digit scorer every game, but he'll come in and give you a nice little spark every couple of games or so, maybe a double-digit game here and there, knock down a couple of threes, kind of keep the offense flowing. And that last spot is Anton Gill, the senior from transfer from Louisville that got hurt last year. He's back now. He is actually sitting out tonight as well. Pulled his groin a little bit, and obviously he's got the knee injury that he's still kind of rehabbing, working his way back from, a little sore. So he's going to be out tonight, but they're hoping to get some defensive minutes out of him.
Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com, basketball extraordinaire, at Jacob Padilla _. Jacob, got about 20 seconds here. What's a win total you're comfortable in projecting for Nebraska? Are they bubble worthy? Are they better than that? Are they just short of it? What do you think?
I think 16 to 19 wins is the range that you're looking at for this season. If everything comes together, it could potentially crack that 20, kind of that 20 range. But if you fall anywhere between 16 and 19 wins, I think that is kind of the good step in the progression under 10 miles. And you'll feel really good coming in next season with most of the guys coming back.
Read him and follow him at Jacob Padilla _ HailVarsity.com, all over Husker Hoops and Husker Football. Jacob, will catch up soon, bud. Thanks for a few.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Excited about Nebraska basketball. Applebee's Tuesday Trivia. $50 gift card, yours. We'll do trivia next. Get in line, 466-377-6800, 825-5865.
Chime in, 402-466-ESPN, or email the show, Chris at HailVarsity.com.
Just try me, try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Okay, the Ric Flair 30 for 30 will be insane to watch tonight. Thoughts on that in a minute. Well, depending on how quick we get a Applebee's Tuesday trivia winner, you can dial up 466-377-6800, 825-5865. Tuesday trivia with Applebee's. Don't forget, Tuesdays and Thursdays, 50-cent boneless, 55-cent bone-in wings all day. Get the charred. /blackened/awesome. You'll love them. Dine in, call ahead for Carside to go. If you want to get a Bourbon Street or some nachos or, I don't know, how about some of their pasta dishes? But Applebee's, three locations in Lincoln, and our friends out in Grand Island, Hastings, Kearney, North Platte, York, Columbus, Sydney, and Scotts Bluff. Let's get things rolling here with Tuesday Trivia. With Applebee's. Jeff is with us. Jeff, how are you?
Hey, great, Chris.
Okay. I need to know, since it is Goofer Week, what PJ stands for PJ Fleck.
Ooh, let's see. Paul John.
No. But good try. Thanks for trying. Thanks for playing, Jeff. Good try. That is our trivia question. 800-825-5865, 466-3776. What does PJ, keep it appropriate, what does PJ stand for in PJ Fleck? Need to know PJ Fleck's real name. Brent, come on down. Brent, how are you? Is this Brent?
Me?
Now I got you.
Okay.
We got to just get a shock collar on Colton in there to make sure we have the old volume turned on. Brent, do you have an answer for me?
It's Philip John.
Philip John, it is. Philip John Fleck. Rowing that boat. Brent, hang on the line for me, okay?
All right, thank you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. There we go. Very painless and simple Tuesday trivia today. Sometimes it takes for, I don't know, 15 minutes to get it handled. But Philip John Fleck, born November 29th, 1980. But his hairline looks like he was born in 1918. It's okay. He shaves it. He's good with it. Some of you do that. Love you for it. Okay, Ric Flair, the Nature Boy, a big-time profile into his life tonight, 30 for 30. And, you know, when you think of 30 for 30s, I was extremely jacked and excited about the Bad Boys, the Detroit Pistons. Loved watching those Pistons teams, even though I was a Jordan guy. Loved Bo Jackson's. Big time. We were lucky enough to have Brian Bosworth on when the Boz came out. And then, of course, the O.J. Simpson Made in America was incredible. Where does the Ric Flair 30 for 30 fall on the ESPN 30 for 30 scale? Time will tell. I'm hoping to catch the replay tonight after I get done with things at PBA. So that'll be pretty good. So I saw this on Twitter, and Jay Moore had it posted up. ESPN put it up. And here's what you can do. We'll play this with Colton. It's actually going to be the same as mine. What you do here, your wrestling name generator. Okay? You've heard other name generator. Like your Urban Dictionary definition for your first name is hilarious. Or very sad, one of the two. But Jay Moore retweeted this, the wrestling name generator. Do we have a little sound effect action going on? Woo! That it? That it?
That's all I could find, yeah.
Okay. There's more Ric Flair in there. But so what you do, your first letter of your first name, and then the last letter of your last name, and what you have is A for electric, B for hardcore, C is for Mr., D is Rocky, E is smooth. I retweeted this. F is mean, G is bull, H is Lord, I is buddy. So if you had the, if your first name began with an I and your last name began with a J, you'd be Buddy Magnificent, which I think would be awesome. For me, Chris Schmidt, C equals Mr., S equals Dragon. I would be Mr. Dragon, as would Colton Stone. Okay, so I don't know. Just play that at home. Do the wrestling name generator tonight and sleep well. And I said tonight, it's tomorrow at 9 Eastern. So it's not tonight. So I won't be catching the replay. Point is, it should be pretty good. And he's looking old. He's looking old and worn and tired. Let's talk a little bit here about Nebraska football. No other way to segue. Danny Langsdorf. Practice comments last night, a couple of thoughts from him. One being that Minnesota defense, statistically, they're awful, cut five through the air. But be wary of that Gopher D because overall they're pretty sound.
You know, those lies Lies, statistics, I think was it Mark Twain said it, somebody? You can't ever read too much into it, but it's an indicator that they've had a little bit of trouble running the ball defending the run at times. So it's something that we want to make sure we're geared up for. I think the weather's going to be a factor. At least the forecast could be for some crummy weather, and I think that runs will be important in that game. But, you know, I think they have two solid D tackles that give you some problems. I don't think they're as big a defensive end as we've faced lately, I think, which has been maybe a little bit of their problem. They haven't been able to hang in there maybe for an entire game. But their backers are good. Their safeties are physical hitters. So, you know, they'll be down in there tight. They're a quarters team, and they like to force with those safeties. So they'll be tough. They're physical. They play hard. I think their ends are probably a little smaller than we've seen. So it's something that we've got to, you know, go after them.
Last thought here from Langs. Momentum for Saturday. Is it real? I think it is.
I think playing our best game. You know, I think that for the quarterback, you know, doing a good job of seeing the field and spreading the ball and checking the ball down and not either guessing on coverage or forcing any throws. I think for the unit, having the balance of running the ball and you know, finding those completions is big. You know, it's a conference opponent on the road. Those are big ones. Those are tough games. We're still pushing hard to get victories in the West Division and working hard to a bowl game. So I think there's a lot of stuff out there for us to keep fighting and battling and preparing for. I think our guys were excellent today. One of the better Monday practices we've had. So I'm encouraged by their effort, their attitude towards continually improving.
Danny Langsdorf, guys are souping up for Minnesota. We'll wind down a Tuesday on Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
And we can just reconcile and bring a guy back and celebrate him, hopefully by just kicking the crap out of him.
Mission tonight. Make it hurt with Northwood coming in. We'll see what this team looks like. No Roby tonight. No Anton Gill tonight. But plenty of versatility that'll be on hand as you head down to PBA. That's one thing to look forward to this season, to see where they challenge in the Big Ten.
We could play big or small or medium, which is I like the versatility of this team. I think you got to have a real pulse for your team. Basketball is its own little beast. The largest guys in the smallest area, high traffic, high turnover kind of sport, like hockey, for instance. For instance, if you like hockey, basically you like basketball with just constant and instantaneous turnovers over and over and over, right? It's a joke, you know. Who likes watching turnovers? Hockey fans. So,
little punch to the hockey fan, but let's talk rotation and what the options are for Nebraska, and you're going to try and feel them out against better opponents, not necessarily Northwood tonight.
So I think it depends on the night, you know, depending on what group's working well together. The biggest thing with this team is communication. There are some groups that right now do not communicate well together, are not, you know, switching screens, aren't doing the things that just normal game plan stuff. You have your absolutes of this is the way we play. When this action happens, this is what our base defense looks like. Then you have game plan stuff like this dude, you're not going to let him do this. And this guy, you're going to make sure we're going to double him or whatever. Some of our guys still aren't doing the base stuff correctly. And so you got to be careful about putting too many of those guys out there at the same time.
Tim Miles, lastly, what is the expectation for Mr. Glenn Watson? How good can he be this season?
I believe Glenn Watson is an all Big Ten caliber player. I believe that as you look at him and you look at some of the other point guards I've had that I know are special, Ben Woodside always jumps to my mind, a kid at North Dakota State that I think he gave the Collins kid at Kansas, about 39 in the NCAA tournament. Ben got 60 in a game. And I look at Glenn as that type of, you know, he's a difference maker, and he can get his own shot at the end of a clock. He's not afraid to take a big shot, an important shot at the end of a shot clock or game clock. I remember against Rhode Island our freshman year, he dribbled to the middle and did like a 12-foot step through and hit it with about 30 seconds left that really kind of iced the game for us. And I didn't see him practice that one very much, but, you know, I mean, he took it and he hit it, and that's the kind of player he is. So you knew that he, you know, he's got some huevos in there that a lot of other guys don't, and I'm just excited to see him continue to progress. He's shooting it better than ever. He's fast. I think he's passing it better. You know, his assists are up in practice, so that's good. It also helps when the guys you throw it to shoot and make it. Hell of an idea.
We heard huevos, hell of an idea, and all Big Ten. So, there we have it. Tomorrow, we'll get caught up with Brad Edwards, ESPN Insider, College Game Day. His take on the college football playoff should be pretty cut and dry. 1-6 tonight. Where does Wisconsin come in? And what's the likelihood of Wisconsin staying unscathed against Iowa and against Michigan and then still get through a Big Ten championship game unbeaten? It's the only hope of the Big Ten. You'll have secondary losses piled on the Big 12. And Notre Dame and Miami, just like old times. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 4. Thanks for tuning in to Hail Varsity.